Well, good evening. I'm glad to be here with you, and I appreciate the words and the prayer on my behalf. And the lesson tonight, Mark asked me about coming and giving a lesson on First Sunday night. I said, sure. And then he said, well, are you going to give a super lesson? Because that's Super Bowl Sunday. I didn't know it was Super Bowl Sunday, but when I got thinking about it, I thought, well, why not try it? So, Super Bowl frenzy and longevity. You wonder what these two have in common? Not a lot, but I'm using them as one to contrast the other. And I'll tell you up front that this is a feel-good lesson because I figured I'd be preaching to the choir tonight. And so, you know, there's no use in beating anybody up. So this is a feel-good lesson. And I hope you leave here feeling better than you did when you came. If you didn't, I'm messing up. I'm not presenting the word right, because this is what we're going to talk about, is things to make us be glad that we're in church tonight. Super Bowl frenzy and longevity. Let's first look at Super Bowl frenzy. Now, let's qualify this just a little bit. It's not just about the Super Bowl, but it is about frenzy. It is about people that live from one weekend to the next looking for the frenzy of a sporting event or something in their life, as opposed to a person that's on an even keel, that has a good foundation, that's the same day in and day out. Nothing shakes them very much. They're just good, steady people. We're talking about people that are frenzied about one thing or another. Now, we're talking about the Super Bowl simply because this is Super Bowl Sunday, and we'll just look at a few things. Super Bowl frenzy involves a frenzy of activity. It's the biggest audience for new commercials. You don't have to look at very much advertisements to know that. Millions and millions of dollars are going to be spent out tonight just because it's the biggest audience for new stuff. These advertisements sometimes will make or break a new business or a new product. It's been proven over about the last 34 years. It's the biggest day for ordering pizza delivery. It's the biggest stress day for a municipal water system. Some water systems report their greatest drop in pressure during halftime at Super Bowl because everybody gets up and goes to the bathroom at the same time. They also flush your commode at the same time. So it stresses the water system. They can really tell if their pumps and everything is working how much the water pressure drops at certain specific times during the Super Bowl. There's a record amount of illegal betting that's going to go on. Now, I may say this number wrong. It seems like they were anticipating $1 billion. Look, the past record was last year. It's something like $994 million, and this one was supposed, they thought, was going to beat it. Illegal bets. Church services canceled or altered. If you looked at the news this past week, some churches were getting in trouble because they were going to show the Super Bowl on their big screen. Now, the NFL has got rights to how many people can view their broadcast, and something about if you put it on a screen over 55 inches and you have multiple people looking at it and you're not a bar or a sports facility that shows them all the time, but you're doing it for a one-time event, it's illegal. So these churches are faced with, are we going to do it or are we going to be legal? So that's just a little bit of the things that go on. Now, does the Bible talk about frenzied events? Certainly does. The Bible has its moments of frenzy, and they're usually not good. Let's look at one. Israel showed her real passions in Exodus 32, 6, 7, and 19. When Moses was on the mount receiving the Ten Commandments the first time, the people became disturbed at the bottom of the mount. They got bored. This is what happened. They rose up early on the morrow and offered burnt offerings and brought peace offerings, and the people sat down to eat and to drink and rose up to play. Now that expression should be familiar to you from the New Testament. They sit down to eat and drink, they rise up to play. The Lord said unto Moses, go get you down, for your people, which you brought out of the land of Egypt, have corrupted themselves. This was not good. And it came to pass, as soon as he came nigh unto the camp, that's Moses, that he saw the calf and the dancing, and Moses' anger waxed hot. And he cast the tables out of his hands and broke them beneath the mount. A moment of frenzy. The people were expressing their desire for excitement and for something to happen that they could control. We look a little farther at Samson. his captors partied one time too many. Judges, the 16th chapter, verses 24 and 25. After Samson had been caught, haircut, eyes put out, the people wanted a little more fun out of him. When the people saw him, they praised their God, for they said, "Our God has delivered into our hands the enemy and the destroyer of our country, which slew many of us." And it came to pass, when their hearts were merry, that they said, "Call for Samson, that he may make us sport." And they called for Samson out of the prison house, and he made them sport. And they set him between the pillars. And that was a huge mistake, because he killed more in death than he did in his life. But they made merry. Their hearts were merry in thinking about other things than God. Paul said no in the New Testament to the partiers. This is the way Paul said it in Romans 13, 12 and 13. "The night is far spent, the day is at hand. Let us therefore cast off the works of darkness, and let us put on the armor of light. Let us walk honestly as in the day, not in rioting." Now, in parentheses are a further definition of exactly what some of these words are. "Not in rioting," which means reveling, merrymaking, a noisy good time, "and drunkenness," we know what that is, "not in chambering," which is lewd, immodest behavior, and it comes from the word chamber, which we think of a place to recline, so you can see the connection between lewd and immodest behavior and the word chambering, "and wantonness," which is reckless, heartless, not moral or chaste, "not in strife and envying." So Paul says, don't do all these things, but be serious, be steady, be level-headed, and not a person that is in a frenzy about a party. Peter also said it this way, that enough is enough. He said in 1 Peter 4, 3 and 4, "The time past of our life may suffice us to have wrought the will of the Gentiles when we walked in lasciviousness," which is feeling lust and lust, "excessive wine, revelings, banquetings, and abominable idolatries, wherein they think it strange that you run not with them to the same excess of riot, speaking evil of you." But look at this expression, "excess of riot." Now, the Lord wants us to feel good. He wants us to have a good time. What happened when the angels came and proclaimed Christ was born? There was great joy. When the people received the gospel, there was great joy. It's not wrong to be joyful, but what are we joyful about? So the first part of this lesson is not Super Bowl frenzy, not the frenzy of a sporting event or the frenzy of a party or something like that where wickedness goes on, but rather be joyful about being in the Lord's church. So, longevity. Just so happens that I was reading a book about longevity, and the title of it is The Longevity Bible. The Longevity Bible. Now, it's not a religious book, and so the author does not put religious verses behind the principles in that book. But as I read that book, things just started jumping out. I'm going to show you one. Where my idea for even using this in this lesson. Now, remember, this part of the lesson is opposed to the first part. The first part was Super Bowl frenzy. We're speaking of people that just get up and high for certain things. But now we're talking about longevity. What makes people live a long, steady, good life they feel good about? Not just living long, but living good. And this is one of the first studies that was in the book that caught my eye. Visiting a house of worship can extend life expectancy about 7 years. Now, this is just from observations, from studies of people that they have watched. Now, it didn't say they had to be dedicated. It didn't say they had to go Wednesday night. It didn't say they had to devote half their time and money to the church. They just got to go. Just go and mix and mingle with other people that are going to a house of worship. So, you know, what about us? It's really dedicated. It ought to extend our lives a little bit longer than that. But I began to think about, well, is there anything in the Bible that talks about this? Colossians 2, 1 and 2, "For I would that you knew What great conflict I have for you and for them at Laodicea, and for as many as have not seen my face in the flesh, that their hearts might be comforted, being knit together in love, and unto all riches of the full assurance of understanding, to the acknowledgement of the mystery of God, and of the Father, and of Christ. Now this wouldn't be real obvious to you, but after reading the book, and all the other things I'm going to show you tonight, the advantages of attending a house of worship is right here. Their hearts might be knit together in love, and right here, a full assurance of understanding. We know who we are. We know how we got here. And most importantly, we know where we're going. That is what makes this important to visiting a house of worship and living, simply living a longer life. Less stress, more mental comfort. All right, let's look at another one. Another thing that was in the Longevity Bible, it said to reduce relationship clutter. Conserve your energy for people you love and care about. Old relationships may be more damaging than they are enriching. Well, does the Bible address anything like this? Well, I think so. 2 Corinthians 6, verses 14 through 17 says, "Be you not unequally yoked together with unbelievers, for what fellowship has righteousness with unrighteousness?" Then skip a few verses, and he says, "Wherefore come out from among them, and be you separate, says the Lord." We talk about this sometimes when we talk about people that come to church and they obey the gospel, that they really can't have the same friends that they had before. They shouldn't want the same friends unless they could convert those friends. They shouldn't want the same lifestyle they had before. If they want to go back to the same lifestyle and stay with the same friends, then why do they walk up the aisle and take the preacher's hand and even get wet? It just doesn't make sense. And that's what this is about. Reduce relationship clutter. Don't try to hang on to everything if other people are dragging you down. Let go. And spend time on the people you do love and care about, your smaller circle of influence. The ability to let go of angry feelings lowers stress levels and fosters a positive attitude. Now we're going to begin to pick up the thread of a positive attitude and it helping you live a longer life. And this is the beginning. Let go of bad feelings. You know somebody that just can't let go of a grudge. They're just going to hang on to it and hang on to it. Well, if they can't let go of a big grudge, I'm telling you that there's lots of little things they're hanging on to that you don't even know about. A lot of little daily things are rubbing them the wrong way that they constantly get mad about this and constantly get mad about that and get agitated about this. Over and over it goes until all day they have a stress level that's through the roof. And they come home and stress comes out on their family and their kids, and they can't get along. And then things just get worse. Jesus would fix all that. All we got to do is read the book. Mark 11, 25 and 26. When you stand praying, forgive. That's all you got to do. If you have aught against any. That your Father also, which is in heaven, may forgive you your trespasses. But if you do not forgive, neither will your Father, which is in heaven, forgive your trespasses. And I can't spend enough time on this one thought. But forgive, forgive, forgive. We must be forgiving people. It lowers our stress level. It's good for us, not only the relations we have with others, but it's good for our stress level to just let things go. Isaiah pronounced a woe on the partiers. Well, I got one slide that completely jumped out of place, so my stress level's going up a little bit. But imagine that we're still talking about the first thing we talked about. I thought I had one more in there, and I wondered where it was. Here it is. Funny thing about PowerPoint, it show up in the funniest places when you can't fix it. Isaiah said in Isaiah 5, 11 and 12, "Woe unto them that rise up early in the morning, that they may follow strong drink, that continue until night, till wine inflame them, and the harp and the viol and the tabret and the pipe and wine are in their feasts, but they regard not the work of the Lord, neither consider the operation of His hands." So again, those that would live in a frenzy are not well spoken of in the Bible by any of the prophets or by any of the things that's happened. And I can only guess what slide is going to come up next. Okay, optimist, back on the good part. Optimists win the longevity game. Optimists and pessimists. Pessimists see things as always something wrong with it, always won't work. The glass is always half full and it's running out. Optimists see the glass is half full and there's still something left in it to use. They think good things are going to happen. Optimists win the longevity game. Optimists tend to avoid depression, which is known to shorten lifespan. Optimists tend to get timely medical help because they think they can improve or prevent health problems. Pessimists don't want to go because they don't think they can do anything about their health anyway. Optimists in one study had lower white cell count, and a white cell count is what you get if you get an infection. Your white cell count goes up. That's your body's natural things that fight infection. So in one study, optimists had a lower white cell count than those that dwelt on negative thoughts. Optimists are more inclined to feel content with their lives. Self-satisfaction is associated with longevity. You know, if you think everything's going bad, why do you even want to live long? And so a lot of times the things we think about the most and want to happen, they happen. Study of the impact of a sense of well-being and happiness found satisfied people were twice as likely to survive after 20 years than those who claimed to be dissatisfied with their life. Are you satisfied with your life? Are you dissatisfied? I'd say most of you are satisfied. 1 Timothy 6, 6 through 8 said, "But godliness with contentment is great gain. For we brought nothing into this world, and it is certain we can carry nothing out. And having food and raiment, let us be therewith content." And what a truth that is, an optimist. How can a person who is a Christian be anything other than an optimist? You've got the Lord on your side. And if God is with you, who can be against you? And He knows what you need before you ask Him to pray. And all things that happen to you are going to happen for good. Even if it's bad, He's trying to show you how to overcome it, which we're going to see in a minute, is a very positive value. The ability to overcome something that happens is bad. So if nothing ever bad happens, how will you ever know that you've got the strength from God to get over it? So how can a Christian be anything other than an optimist? But I see some. You can see it on their faces. And not very optimistic. One third of how we age is by genetics, but two thirds are from our personal lifestyle choices. People that view aging in a positive light live 7.5 years longer than those with a negative attitude toward aging. Well, I don't know how you know except just watch the way people live and their health and how long they die and what they die from. But you can take this as just the results of observations in a study. Hebrews 13:14 says, "For here have we no continuing city, but we seek one to come." Now, does that not kind of seem ironic to you? That because we realize that here we have no continuing city, but we seek one in heaven, that would give us the comfort and the lower stress level and the proper attitude that would allow us to live longer on this earth. But it's not a matter of just living longer. It's a matter of living well. Now take any business and think of what happens when that business starts to buy out and retire the people that's worked there the longest, that know the most about how the business is supposed to run and can make the best decisions. What happens? They buy out the people at the top. They've got a bunch of new people at the bottom that's got to learn the whole business. Yeah, they're paying them less money. They're saving money, but they bought out the brain trust. Okay? So what do you think God wants? a bunch of young folks that's struggling trying to find their way, or a bunch of old gray heads that have figured this thing out about life, that are still good for several years in the master service as good examples. So as ironic as this statement is, that realizing we have no continuing city, but we seek one to come, that would help promote a longer life, may not make sense to us, but it makes perfect sense to God. Because these young heads need these old gray heads to help show the way, if the gray heads will show the way. That's what we need to do, is to show the way. What affects our ability to think in a positive way? Four things: early childhood experience, family background, self-esteem, and the degree of spirituality. Those are four things that affect the way we think, if we're going to think in a positive way. What does the Bible say about the way parents raise children? The Bible says, Proverbs 22:6, train up a child in the way he should go, and when he is old, he will not depart from it. Are you training your child to be an optimist or a pessimist? Are you training him to think positively, or to, the term is ruminate, just like cows ruminate? Or do you train your child to ruminate on the bad things that can happen? Ephesians 6:4, and you fathers, provoke not your children to wrath, but bring them up in the nurture and admonition of the Lord. The way we talk to our children can promote or quieten them, can promote wrath or can quieten them down, the way we talk. Colossians 3:21, fathers, provoke not your children to anger, lest they be discouraged. We want our children to think positive ways, positive things, positive thoughts. There's a great value in self-esteem. We want our children to have self-esteem. It helps them live a long time. People with good self-esteem have more fulfilling relationships. They enlarge their circle of influence, and that's what we want. We want to enlarge our circle of influence, not make it smaller. Some people are content to have one good friend. They've got one good friend, that's all they need. They don't need anybody else. Some people want two or three. Some people want a handful. A Christian wants to enlarge his circle of influence, to influence as many people as possible. Now, some of you may remember this from a previous lesson, but we have a circle of influence which may be this big and include the people right around us that know enough about us that would actually think about making a lifestyle change if we asked them to. Then we have this huge circle of concern. All these people, like for instance, that show up on the prayer list from 3-4 states away that we don't know, but we are concerned, but we don't really know them well enough to say that, even think that they're in our circle of influence, but they are in our circle of concern. Now, spend your time, if you want to do something, spend your time in that circle of influence, because those are the people that, again, know you well enough and think enough of you that they would try to do what you ask them to do if they could see it in you that it's worthwhile. So, those that have self-esteem, good self-esteem, have more fulfilling relationships. What else? They are more resilient, and I couldn't hammer on this one too much. If I wanted my sons, when they were babies, if the number one thing I wanted them to be was a Christian, the number two thing I wanted to be was resilient. Because one thing that really hurts me is when I see someone who's getting jerked around and they just fall all to pieces and just get pitiful and are just reduced to a wad of emotions and crying. My heart really goes out. But if I want my boys or somebody close to me, if I want them to be tough enough to take life and trust in God, I want them to be resilient. I want them to take that licking and keep on ticking, because somewhere somebody's going to shut the door in their face. and somebody's going to hurt them, and somebody's going to say something bad about them, and something bad's going to happen to them, and life's going to throw them a curve, and it's going to hit them right there. And I want to be able to get up. I want to be Christians first, but I want to be resilient. The ability to recover from a negative experience is part of self-esteem. Third one is they're more upbeat. And listen, who wants to imitate a loser? Now, I don't want to bounce off the wall, but on the other hand, if I wear a face that says, life's beating me, boys, no use you following me, then who's going to follow me? What kind of person is going to follow me if I look like a loser? Nobody. Better able to cope with adversity. Not if, but when. Adversity will come. It's not a question of whether it's going to come in your life. It's just a question of when it's going to come. It may come when you're 18. It may come when you're 28. It may come when you're 78. But it's coming. Will you be able to stand it? How do you develop self-esteem? Well, this was an interesting statement. And the statement was that you best develop self-esteem by matching your actions with your beliefs. You live the way you think. You don't put up a front. Well, is there a verse that goes with this? Well, now this one looked to me like it fit perfect. James 1:5-7, if any of you lack wisdom, let him ask of God, that gives to all men liberally, and upbraids not, and it shall be given him. But let him ask in faith, nothing wavering. For he that wavers is like a wave of the sea, driven with the wind and tossed. Let not that man think he shall receive anything of the Lord. If you're going to pray for it, expect that you're going to get it. If you're going to pray for it, don't worry. If you're going to worry about it, don't pray. I'm concerned about a lot of things. I'm not worried about too many. Because the Lord carried me through too many things that I didn't have any idea of how it was going to turn out. But it's turned out. It's not easy, but it turned out. Fancy vacations, expensive cars, jewelry, on and on, are usually only quick fix gratifications. They border on being frenzied. Now, this next example is going to seem harsh to you, but follow it all the way through. This is not anything derogatory. This is just simply observing people's attitudes. There was a study made of lottery winners and those that were suddenly paralyzed, as in a trapped car accident. Okay, so long term, who's going to be happier? The people who were lottery winners or the people who were paralyzed? In this one study, for the lottery winners, the initial joy did not last in the long run, partly because everyday pleasures paled next to the thrill of winning the big one. On the other hand, the people who were paralyzed, many learned to adjust to their new disabilities, and in the long run, were better able to appreciate small pleasures and accomplishments. So what do we look for our sense of well-being? The great big things or the little things? Sustained contentment is more likely to result from healthy relationships and meaningful accomplishments. Now, that's the statement in the book, but I want you to focus on this part. Meaningful accomplishments. What is the most meaningful thing you think you can do in this life? What can you do? I'm going to relate it to you this way. This fellow attended a concert. And he listened to the man playing the piano at this concert. And after it was over with, he came up to him and he said, you just took my breath away with your playing. It was wonderful. I'd give my life if I could play the piano like you could. And the piano man said, I did. He had given his life to be able to play that piano. That was his accomplishment in his entire life. He spent so much time. So, what to you is a meaningful accomplishment? James 5:19-20, brethren, if any of you do err from the truth, and one convert him, let him know that he which converts the sinner from the error of his way shall save a soul from death, and shall hide a multitude of sins. There will be no trophy head mounted on the wall for one that converts another one. There will be no plaque. There will be no diploma. There will be no degree. There will be no letters after your name. Probably no one will ever know except the person that you aided to see the light. So maybe many people don't really see being a soul winner as very much. But when it all boils down on the judgment day, what do you think then is going to be the most meaningful thing we could have done with our time? And I propose to you that meaningful accomplishments is a lifetime of trying to help people and be a good example in some way or another and do what's right. Another study found people felt happier when they acted extroverted, as in they sing aloud, walk over and talk to someone that they're not used to talking to, be more assertive and energetic around people. Sometimes you see this tip in motivational writings and motivational speakers say, act the way you want to be around other people. We've got a book in our song that says, sing and be happy. Do you listen to the words of that song when we sing that song? That's what this song that we've sung for years is all about. Act in a way to be happy. 1 Corinthians 14 and 15. What is it then? I will pray with the Spirit. I will pray with the understanding also. I will sing with the Spirit. And I will sing with the understanding also. Do you ever come into church and I just don't feel like singing tonight. I just don't feel like picking the book up. I just don't feel like putting forth the effort. Well, I will sing with the Spirit. I will sing with the Spirit. God wants you to sing whether you really feel like it or not, because He wants you to sing for Him. Isn't there something in the Bible that says when you're working, don't work as if you're just working for the other man, but work as if you're working for God? It's what a Christian is supposed to work for. Even if his boss gives him a chance to slack off, he's not supposed to, because we're working for God. So we're singing for God. So we should act like we're happy. And you know what? Chances are we'll get to feeling that way. If the skies above you are gray, you're feeling so blue. So on and so forth. Sing and be happy. We know that song by heart. Okay, now, let's sum all this up. In Ephesians, the 5th chapter, verses 1 through 20, it's almost like Paul is addressing everything that I've talked about so far so quickly and with very little comment. We're going to look at the things Paul says, and I'll let you tie it all together, the things we've talked about tonight and the way Paul phrases it in Ephesians 5, 1 through 20. Paul says, be ye therefore followers of God as dear children, and walk in love as Christ also has loved us, and has given himself for us an offering and a sacrifice to God for a sweet smelling savor. But fornication and all uncleanness or covetousness, let it not be once named among you as becometh saints, neither filthiness, nor foolish talking, nor jesting, which are not convenient, but rather giving of thanks. For this you know, that no whoremonger, nor unclean person, nor covetous man, who is an idolater, has any inheritance in the kingdom of Christ and of God. Let no man deceive you with vain words, for because of these things come to the wrath of God upon the children of disobedience. Be not you therefore partakers with them. For you were sometimes darkness, but now are you light in the Lord. Walk as children of light, for the fruit of the Spirit is in all goodness and righteousness and truth, proving what is acceptable unto the Lord. And have no fellowship with the unfruitful works of darkness, but rather reprove them. For it is a shame even to speak of those things which are done of them in secret. But all things that are reproved are made manifest by the light, for whatsoever does make manifest is light. Wherefore he says, awake you that sleep, and arise from the dead, and Christ shall give you light. See then that you walk circumspectly, not as fools, but as wise, redeeming the time, because the days are evil. Wherefore, be you not unwise, but understanding what the will of the Lord is. And finally, be not drunk with wine, wherein is excess, but be filled with the Spirit, speaking to yourselves in psalms and hymns and spiritual songs, singing and making melody in your heart to the Lord, giving thanks always for all things unto God and the Father in the name of our Lord Jesus Christ. Couldn't you tell how many of those things were addressing the frenzied lifestyle and how many were addressing the Christian church-going lifestyle like you and I lead? So finally, Super Bowl frenzy and longevity. What choice will it be? Super Bowl frenzy or the Lord's longevity for you and for me? It is your choice. And if you want to have good self-esteem, make the right choice. Don't just fake it that you've made a choice and you're wanting to live another lifestyle or living another lifestyle. But make the choice to serve the Lord and live that choice. Live a long life and live a good life, free from the ups and downs of a frenzied lifestyle. And I hope that you think about these things and these verses and you feel pretty good when you leave here. Now, I don't want anyone to feel guilty going home and watching the Super Bowl, because if you had been eaten up with Super Bowl frenzy, you wouldn't have been at church to start with. You'd been home watching it now. So don't feel guilty about going home and watching, because I don't think any of you are eaten up with the frenzy. So go home and feel good about being a Christian every day. If we can assist anyone tonight in obeying the gospel or in the prayers of the church or strengthening the restoration, please give us a chance while we stand and sing.
I am resolved, O Lord, cursed and cursed on by the world's divide. Things that are higher, things that are nobler, this have allured my heart. I live a faith unto Him, faith unto bread and free. Thank you.